Hello, and thank you for joining today's Family Office in Focus podcast. My name is Mark Tepsick, and I'm the Family Office Design and Governance Strategist for Family Office Solutions here at UBS. Family Office Solutions is a team of dedicated specialists who work with our private wealth advisors to deliver holistic advice to the firm's wealthiest families. Our solutions include areas such as income tax strategies, family office advisory, family advisory and philanthropy services, and art advisory, just to name a few. We're solely focused on advancing our platform and resources targeted to the family office segment. For today's podcast, I am joined by Esker Edom, Director at Major Lindsay in Africa, as well as Mike Gabriel, General Counsel at Crossroads Group, Integrated Family Office. Before we begin, I want to mention the following. Major Lindsay in Africa is included within the UBS Professional Network, but is not affiliated with UBS. Major Lindsay in Africa in the Professional Network in the selection of this firm to brief clients on family office recruitment is not a recommendation of or a business referral to them. So just take a step back. This conversation that we're going to have here today is about the Family Office General Counsel. So Escor, he spent time, probably a year and a half inside of a family office with, in the general counsel's office. And then we have Mike, who is an attorney by background, clearly, and is at a family office where he acts as general counsel. And so in my personal opinion, I happen to think the general counsel is sort of the missing link in family offices. I think Escor would agree, as well as Mike. And so this is why we're here today. We're here to talk about just the total dynamic of the general counsel in the family office. So my first question is going to be to S. S, could you tell us a little bit of background about yourself, MLA, and the work you do there?
So as Mark sort of alluded to, prior to coming into the recruitment space, I spent some time working in the family office, Office of General Counsel. That was during my time in law school at Case Western, and that exposure really helped shape my recruitment practice in a way. So since 2018, I've been in the recruitment world, focusing exclusively on legal recruitment. Since coming here to Major Lindsay in Africa, I've expanded my practice, and a portion of that now focuses on the family office space, whether it be outright single family offices or more hybrid structures that are starting to take on third party capital or even multifamily offices. All of our engagements are focusing on bringing in-house talent for our clients, either at a general counsel level or at a more junior level. I understand today we're going to focus more at the GC level, so I'm happy to provide any context as to just why it makes sense to have a GC within this particular sort of vehicle.
All right, perfect. So you actually spend some time in a family office and then you help family office today recruit and seek out general counsels. All right, so Mike, switching gears a little bit. So you're an attorney and family office general counsel, so that's where you're at today. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background and some of the work you do, at the family office itself?
Yeah, definitely happy to. And Mark, I have to correct you after 10 years of knowing me. You still pronounce my last name wrong. It's Gabriel.
Gabriel, perfect. I'll use that going forward.
But yeah, actually, funny enough, Escor and I went to law school together. Both went to case law. Went into the practice for a little bit. Didn't love the everyday practice, and at the time, my family had a whole bunch of businesses: real estate, healthcare stuff, manufacturing. And decided to go in. I kind of went in as a general counsel. I think that's the official title I gave myself. But the reality was, with less than a year of actual legal experience, I wasn't that useful to general counsel. And it took time to develop. I mean, in fact, you talked about Crossroads Group. Crossroads Group's actually not our family office. It's a holding company that we own a super majority of. And that one I actually run day to day, on the family office side, the Gabriel family office side. I'm dealing with everything from trust to taxes to insurance. It's just something different and new every single day. Due diligence docs, as I'm sure you know, when we look at different funds, when we look at different investments. There's contract work, everything under the sun. Thankfully, not really litigation, but I'm sure one day that will be something I have to deal with as well.
Yeah, of course. If you're in business long enough, right, eventually there'll be a dispute or two that goes to litigation. So You had mentioned you kind of grew into the role. I find that a lot with family office GCs. They're coming at it from really a specific niche, right? Estate planning or wealth transfer or federal income tax or real estate. And so when you step into a family office, you know, that might be 5 to 10% of it. And the rest is kind of what you mentioned, right? You're doing due diligence on investments, sub docs. There are obviously a host and a raft of wealth transfer, estate planning, income tax issues, kind of across the board. It's the nature of being an in-house GC, I guess.
Yeah, without a doubt. Look, when I came on board, I definitely had an agenda of kind of glaring issues that I knew existed that I spent the first 6 months tackling. And then from there, it became more of I just kind of turned into more of support and kind of fielded things as they came along and, you know, found other things to hop into. So there was really no clear like job description. I mean, it's my family at the end of the day. It's not like I got some document that says, here's your job description, sign at the bottom, welcome. It was more of a, there's probably a use, so let's do it.
Of course. All right, so great background. So let's go back to S. So S, you wrote an article for our UBS Family Office Quarterly titled The Family Office, General Counsel, Really the Missing Link. Can you tell us a little bit about the conversation you have with family offices when they're deciding to hire a general counsel? Like, when do they start and why do they start, I guess, considering one?
That's a great question. And it's actually hard to have one specific response to that question. It's all context specific. I'll give you a few examples. One example is essentially a family office that started to take on third-party capital and just really decided they wanted to make a business out of that. And we're essentially pivoting from being a single family office to some sort of a registered investment advisor. Going through that process, they had a consultant, a legal consultant attached to the business. This person was operating at a partner level for an Am Law 100 firm. It started to become very expensive over time. And the family just decided it was time to bring in some in-house expertise. So that's one particular trigger point for one type of organization. We can look at more traditional, more quote-unquote vanilla family office situations. Another one being a foreign-based family looking to move the lion's share of their assets to the United States and who need someone that could assist them in doing that, while simultaneously also helping to establish a real estate presence here in the U.S. So that sort of a description requires someone who's incredibly, who has a well-defined risk management barometer, who also has the ability to also be transactional in nature, stepping in as the lead deal counsel on certain transactions and just start to build out that real estate empire here. So it really depends on what the family's dealing with and where they're, what they're looking to make, what they're looking to utilize the vehicle for. And the answer really runs the spectrum. But I hope that was a direct enough response to your question.
Yeah, so it's basically context specific, which is another word for saying it really depends on the family office.
Exactly.
So, Mike, turning back to you, you know, you've been at the family office and the holding company, you know, with operating companies for over 9 years now. You're the family office first GC. What has that experience been like? You know, how have you been able to add value in your role? Can you give a couple of examples?
Yeah, man. I mean, it's a mixed bag. It can feel pretty daunting at times when you just look at some of the issues that pop up that, you know, you're not ultimately responsible for because you outsource it, but you still feel pretty responsible for. So it can be a little intimidating, especially when you come in as a newer lawyer. I'm sure somebody who's been practicing for 10, 12 years wouldn't have the same issues running into that role. You know, I kind of didn't touch on this, and I should have when you were asking about, you know, what does a GC in a family office do? I'd probably honestly say the number one thing is risk assessment. So when you ask, you know, how have you been able to add value in your role? Can you give some examples? Risk assessment is honestly probably number one. Lawyers are pessimistic human beings. Let's be honest. They look for the worst in everything. And But it's a good thing too, right? Because we understand the risks of a contract not saying something that it should. We understand the ultimate liability that could come from one deal or another. So I think, you know, when you come from an entrepreneurial family like mine, where it's kind of go, 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 it's nice to have that trained legal mind, to the extent it is trained, that can look at a situation and go, yeah, this looks great and all, but we got to consider X risk and Y risk. And sometimes you can insure around them. Sometimes you can contract around them. Sometimes they're just risks that you have to be comfortable taking, because the end goal is worth it.
So risk assessment broadly, which I guess I'm going to boil it down to another word or another phrase, it would be better outcomes at the end of the day.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's true. And also being willing to sit there and say no to an opportunity because the risk isn't worth it, whether it's capital risk or legal liability risk. You know, I have a reputation at our office and in my family of, you know, being the guy who's constantly saying no to stuff. But I think that can be, I'm sure I can overdo it, but I think it can actually be important too to have somebody who does that balancing and goes, yeah, it's great. You can have a 1,000,000,000% IRR, but, you know, at what risk? Do we risk everything to try to achieve that? You know, it's a stupid example, but you know what I mean? You just need somebody to really balance those interests between the good and the bad. And I do think that a GC in a family office is in the best position to do that because they understand, all sorts of different risks, even beyond legal liability.
Yeah, of course. I would agree with that. I mean, it's more than numbers, right? It's about qualitative assessments, about coming to better outcomes and balancing sort of that entrepreneurial mindset, with just a couple guardrails at the end of the day.
Exactly.
So sticking with Mike for a second. So Mike, you leverage, I would assume, outside general counsel for various legal issues and other initiatives. How do you add value being the in-house GC to that relationship?
Yeah, good question. So, I mean, two ways. The first one's obvious. I can kind of call BS. Am I allowed to say BS on this? We'll go with it.
Sure.
I can kind of call BS when I look at a bill and go, you know, the simplest one, that should not have cost that much to do. Because I know to some extent what something does or does not cost to do. So that's the simplest one. The other piece is when you have a non-lawyer having an issue looked at by outside counsel, sometimes it can take a little longer to get to what's the actual underlying question. Like you could have a framework of a situation, but not everything in that situation is relevant from a legal standpoint. So I often find that my responsibility is in really drilling down into what's the real legal question that I want the outside counsel to look into. And that can, I mean, that not only saves time, obviously, but it saves money on fees because if you let a paid attorney at a law firm go nuts on some massive issue, they will go nuts when at the end of the day, you only need 10% of that issue addressed because it kind of takes care of the rest.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. You make their role more efficient. It cuts down on cost and you're also getting to the crux of the matter. Right. And
yeah,
one other thing I often see is, you know, you're leveraging outside counsel for sort of disparate issues, right? Just because of the nature of their profession, right? They're usually siloed in income tax and usually even further siloed within that specific, you know, sort of domain, whether it's corporate M&A transactions, but you're able to see the bigger picture and they being outside counsel just cannot just because of nature, right? They're not there with you swimming in that, transacting in it every day. And so they don't see sort of the full enterprise. So I also think that's sort of a value add at the end of the day.
Yeah. Yeah. Without a doubt. And you do put yourself in a better position day one from a legal standpoint. I can think of multiple of our businesses that our holding company has where when we first got into them, if I was not involved day one, it could have been structured improperly and it would have been a nightmare to reverse. Now, I wasn't able to, you know, address every single potential legal ramification involved or do everything perfectly. So I still brought in outside counsel, but I was able to at least get it lifted in a better position than if I had let, you know, the non-lawyers jump into it themselves.
Of course, I would totally agree with that. In full disclosure, I spent a decade at a single family office as counsel and eventually general counsel. So I am kind of well informed on the conversation here. So spoiler alert. But sticking, Mike, one more thing, and you just sort of alluded to it. So let's say you weren't at the family office and they did not have in-house legal counsel. What do you think the risks and other downsides would be there?
Oh, I mean, yeah, you're right. I just alluded to it, but I mean, where do I start? It can be as simple as insurance needs. I mean, if you don't understand your downside risk from a legal standpoint, you don't necessarily know what you need to insure against. If you don't, it can even be with tax structure. If you don't understand some semblance of tax law, you can structure things improperly, and sometimes changing that can be a nightmare. So due diligence, even understanding, like when you go to buy a company or you go to invest in the company and you ask in the due diligence docs for, you know, pending litigation or potential litigation, whatever it is, really understanding the meat of that litigation and what it actually means. You know, most people hear litigation and they get terrified. It doesn't matter what it is. And it's probably the one area where a GC can look at a situation and go, okay, it's actually not that bad. Like that risk isn't that big of a risk because we understand the litigation process. We understand the claims process. So, I mean, those are just some of the ones off the top of my head. Even having the proper documents done from a contract standpoint, whether it's employment contracts or purchase agreements or services agreements, anything you can think of, I know that there are probably tons of people out there that don't have lawyers on speed dial or don't have lawyers in their office where a contract comes across their desk and they look at a couple terms, how long is it, and how much am I paying, and they sign it. And meanwhile, they don't realize they've probably just indemnified somebody for everything and they've agreed to litigate anything in California, God forbid, or wherever it is. So little things like that can add up a lot over time. One or two mistakes won't make a difference, but over 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years can really make doing business difficult if enough of them go bad at once.
So just a more informed view at the end of the day, I guess.
Without a doubt. Yeah.
Not a doubt. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't ignore the lawyers, but, you know, more informed view,
of course.
For sure.
Of course. So, turning back to you now. So, you know, you obviously help family offices in different companies or organizations really to obviously search for and identify the most appropriate counsel or general counsel for them. And so with that said, what qualities do you look for in a GC candidate for family offices? And how do family offices differ in the GC that they're looking to hire? Like, you know, based on intended functions, things like that.
That's a good question. So there's one sort of a catch-all response, and I think it's temperament's probably the best way to put it, or just the ability to really create effective relationships with members of the family and also people across the family office. Within this particular structure, that relationship building skill is incredibly important. If you're not being invited to the table when decisions are made, you're playing catch up, and you never want to play catch up when money's at risk, especially when it's the family's money and the personal relationships within that office start to get complicated because of that. So that's the most important thing. So being able to be viewed as a trusted advisor by members of the family and also members of the family office. But more sort of piggybacking on what I said earlier in the call in response to one of your prior questions, every search is different. A family office may be in a different place in their life cycle. For instance, they may have a massive generational event taking place where assets are being shifted from one generation to the next. and they may need someone step into the general counsel seat to really have that as one of their core skill sets. Or again, they may need someone who is truly a real estate specialist because that's been the historical core of their business, and they want to retain their attachment to that particular industry. So it all depends on where the family is, what they want to utilize the vehicle for, and the skill set that they need to allow them to do so. But just building on that a little bit more, once we actually talk to the family and start to clarify exactly what the need is, how they will utilize the team, what team currently exists, and how they expect the general counsel to operate within the family office context, we start to then build out a profile based on their prior experiences working with other outside counsel or law firm attorneys to see what personality works for you. What do you expect from this person from a leadership perspective? Do you expect the general counsel to be one of the key voices communicating with the family office, or even being an ambassador on behalf of this vehicle to the outside world? But as you start to really refine those needs, then we start to build out an ideal candidate profile and then go to market with that particular profile to find a need.
Perfect. So I guess it comes down to a process, asking the right questions, fleshing out the details, the family culture, their style, and then saying, listen, this is sort of the right temperament based on this profile, but also based on the individual's sort of experience and the family office's experience dealing with outside counsel and how they're going to interact with the family and maybe the outside world in general.
Exactly. So I look at search as a very collaborative process. So that's the first leg of the exercise. But that exercise continues to happen all the way through the search from start to finish. And we typically have something that we call a calibration slate. On that slate, we may present 4 or 5 different profiles that sort of provide different flavors of what we discussed and what we agreed on to allow the family to figure out exactly which of these 5 really speaks to the need and which of these 5 really speaks to the culture we're trying to develop within this family office. That exercise in itself, it's really worth the entire search fee because it allows us to ensure success through the search, post-closing on the search, and actually allow the person to get integrated into the family office successfully.
All right. So with that said, you know, some of the listeners here are going to be family offices that are contemplating searching or investing in the role of the family office GC, onboarding somebody, maybe it's a new role. And so what do you wish family offices would know when they're considering investing in the role of a GC? And maybe what are some of the expectation gaps there?
That's a great question. So just thinking about the discussion you and Mike have had for most of this podcast about the value of a lawyer can add, I wish that more family offices had the ability to sort of just sit in the room and hear the discussion take place. Because most of the times, the person hiring a general counsel does not have legal training, so they're not aware of the places where a general counsel can actually add value. They may view the legal function as something that's very narrow. Someone who's going to assist with trust and estate documents, someone who's going to help manage outside counsel or fend off litigation when it happens, or someone's going to assist us when we're transacting. They don't really see the other aspect of this, where this person could be a connector across various functions, actually adding value to the deal team beyond due diligence, but actually being there when a pitch may be made to see, hey, may not notice this risk, but this is something that we should probably have on our radar if we want to go through with this particular transaction. So from my vantage point, it's just realizing that the legal chair, I like the title chief legal officer as opposed to general counsel, because it really speaks to the gravitas that you get from most of the attorneys who are operating at general counsel level. They're able to work cross-functionally. They're able to really pull in different functions, operations, compliance, real estate, and ensure that everything's moving seamlessly and really working towards the same objective.
So it's very nuanced at the end of the day, mm-hmm. Right?
Exactly.
And the value add is often not only what's right in front of you, but there's a lot of probably hidden value there that a family office GC or, as you mentioned, chief legal officer can really bring to the table and uncover at the end of the day. So, Mike, turn it back to you, and I guess as sort of, you know, teed you up here, what do you think makes a good in-house general counsel?
Yeah, I think Ash nailed it pretty on point. I mean, probably the only thing I'd add on to that. I have an older cousin in California who's been a general counsel in the music industry for years. So when I was leaving firm life to go in house, I called him and he said it best to me. He's like, Mike, general counsels are jacks of all trade. They are masters of none. It's like, you got to be comfortable with that. You know, a lot of people think you bring in a general counsel and, man, now I don't pay additional fees for litigation. No, it would be silly to let a single in-house counsel do litigation. If you hired a litigation attorney, well, you're kind of missing some gaps on some other areas that attorney might not be as interested in, like transactional work or as skilled in. It's being comfortable with the idea that an in-house counsel is going to know what questions to ask, know what specialist to go and talk to. And that is primarily it. I mean, you have documentation stuff. You do contracts in-house, but I'll tell you, the bulk of our contracts, I kind of have like a page limit. Once they get over like 15 pages, I start outsourcing it. Or if it's in a certain subject matter that I'm just not comfortable with, we outsource it. I mean, Mark, you know, we're a real estate family. I still outsource all of our purchase agreements. And I know what I'm looking for, but I'm not comfortable. I don't do it enough day in, day out to go, yeah, I can do this. I mean, in some ways, a good general counsel might actually increase your legal fees to some extent because they will get the better experts involved faster and more often. So I would say I would look for somebody that's got a general knowledge of the law, that has some general litigation knowledge, some general transactional knowledge, some general due diligence knowledge, but they're not trying to be experts in each of them and do it themselves, because that person would have to be able to work 8,000 hours a year, and that's just impossible. So I think you'd be setting yourself up for disaster in that situation.
All right, so it's knowing the right questions to ask and who to go to get those questions answered, which is often bringing in the appropriate external counsel that is siloed in that domain of law that can get you that answer to that question. And then it's done it, you know, hundreds of times.
Yeah. Yeah. And you don't want a general counsel who's, I don't want to call it too egotistical, but that's all I can really think of. That's the only terminology I can think of. You don't want them thinking, yeah, I can handle everything, don't worry about it. Your outside legal fees are going to be zero. Cause I'd be like, there's no possible way you have the expertise in every single area of law that we're going to be dealing with where that structure makes any sense.
Yeah, that would actually enhance risk to the family.
Without a doubt. Yeah. Without a doubt.
S, anything you want to add there? And I know it's kind of like a follow-up to your initial answer, but anything you wanted to add?
Yeah, just sort of piggybacking on everything Mike said, I think a generalist profile for a general counsel is probably the best way to go. It allows you to capture someone who could, essentially, someone who's seen enough of everything to know when to call for help. And that's the best way to mitigate risk within this sort of a structure, right? But also add into the other thing that Mike said, if you have someone who is essentially holding the hand up and saying, I could tackle all of this, you are really setting yourself up for failure. That's not the appropriate role for a general counsel. And also, if they're that tied up in everything, there's no bandwidth to do any higher level thinking.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So thank you for that insight. And so, you know, before we leave here today, I thought it was a great conversation. So S and Mike, we appreciate you joining us here today. Is there anything that either of you would like to leave the listener with before we go? Whoever wants to go first.
If any other listeners want to reach out to me to have a conversation or a discussion about how we help our clients within the space, more than happy to take a call. Just feel free to shoot me an email or just reach out to me.
You know, I think S hit on a point earlier a few minutes ago that probably needs highlighted, and that's, you know, the people who are generally making these hires are non-lawyers. So to his point, reaching out to help in this world is super important, because chances are they don't actually know what they're looking for necessarily.
I would agree with that. I've spoken to a lot of family offices, you know, and sometimes they think they have a need right in front of them. And, you know, it's a very narrow need, but they don't realize sort of the full spectrum that an in-house attorney can really bring to the table, because maybe there's a lot of other work, I forget who said it earlier, of legal work that's going on that's being handled by a non-lawyer. And so there's just, you know, hopefully it leads to better outcomes at the end of the day, which is from an informed decision-making process. And so, you know, S and Mike, I want to thank you both again for your time today. Hopefully for the listeners, this leaves you with a better kind of understanding of the value add that having in-house legal counsel can make for the family office, and then just a better process of going about finding the right person. And so, you know, for more information on the Professional Network and Family Solutions, please reach out to your private wealth advisor. And thank you, and have a great day.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreement and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy.